Welcome to the Education Marketing Leader Podcast with Chris Raposo. If you're looking to dive into the latest industry insights, draw inspiration from education success stories, or just want to sharpen your marketing skills, you're in the right place. Here, we bring you a diverse range of voices from experts and leaders in the field, offering you a unique blend of professional development and practical strategies. Whether you want to understand your audience better, stay updated with the latest tech trends in marketing, or expand your professional network, we've got you covered. So while you're driving on your morning commute or winding down after a busy day, let's explore the dynamic world of education marketing together.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Education Marketing Leader with Chris Raposo. Today, I have a dynamic duo joining me from the Great North, Dave Kibbles, VP of Strategy at Ology. I love how that just rhymes and comes off the tongue so easily. And Ashley Budd, Senior Director of Advancement Marketing at Cornell University. Both are the authors of the best-selling Amazon book, Mailed It. And today's topic will be on crafting emails that connect insights from Mailed It. Day and Ashley, welcome to the show.
Yay, thanks so much for having us.
Thank you, we're excited, yes.
Well, I'm very excited. I'm an avid reader. I loved Mailed It. I posted about it frequently on LinkedIn, promoted it, sent my whole sales team. I always say it's my sales team. It's just the company sales team. I gave them a copy of the book, as well as the CEO of Hannon Hill, Kat Lienjens. So everybody read it, hopefully, and gets a lot out of it. So we can fill that pipeline with email marketing. But let's talk about that book a little bit. You know, why now? What inspired you to write it? I know you talked about it on the conference circuit, but why did you decide to get together and write that book?
Yeah. Well, I would say, I feel like I've always had a soft spot for email. And I think it's the same for Ash. Like, we remember the you've got mail days where, oh, somebody just got an email right now. We remember when that sound was exciting and like you would read everything and it was for you. And we missed those days. That was one of the biggest motivators. Mm-hmm. But then kind of paying attention more professionally to our industry, we noticed survey after survey after survey after survey, right? All the constituents list email as their preferred channel, right? So prospective students want email, parents want email, alumni want emails, donors want email. And Ash and I had been working in email and we knew we had something special to share.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think when we started benchmarking and seeing our results compared to others, and then also just kind of the negativity around results that people were getting, that email wasn't working for them, hearing even other consultants telling people not to invest in email and to invest in social media instead, and all of these things that really didn't make sense to us. There was a real sense of urgency that we felt like we knew what we were doing and many others didn't. And we better get this out there so that we can help people, but also someone else was going to do it if we didn't. So
yeah,
once we decided, it was full speed ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's that saying, you got to seize the opportunity in the opportunity of a lifetime in the lifetime of the opportunity. And when you get that nudge to do something, sometimes, you know, it's the universe or God nudging you like, hey, it's time to do it now. And I'm sure you did it, you know, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I've seen the book launch that you did up in New York. It was really professionally done. Great traction there. And I also, you know, recently, in the recent years, you always hear SEO is dead, email is dead. I haven't heard much about email is dead lately. Maybe they're just not showing up in my feed anymore, but those doubters have quieted a little bit. But how do you see email evolve over the next couple of years, especially with the introduction of AI? And then just feel free to plug your GPT there as well.
Oh, yes. Our robot baby. Well, AI was actually one of the catalysts for us to start writing the book, because we saw how folks were using AI to write emails and we realized that it's just going to create more bad emails and we wanted that to stop. So what I think will evolve with email and now with the introduction of AI tools is that I think we, as senders, we have to start taking our responsibility a lot more seriously, because what AI really is doing is it's giving the recipient, the reader, a lot more control over their inbox. Mm-hmm. AI is going to, you know, analyze what the content of the email is and decide if it's relevant to the person based on the other types of emails that they get. So what I think is going to happen is what Ashley and I are advocates of. We need to start, the evolution is, we need to start thinking of email as a relationship building tool and not as a broadcast channel. So if, you know, on the spectrum of billboard to conversation, we want to be close to conversation. And I think a lot of folks treat email now as billboard. Like, the word email blast makes me cringe. Like, it shouldn't be a blast, right? It should be an opportunity to engage one-on-one with a person. So I think actually AI is going to help us get email to the place where we want it to be from kind of a philosophical perspective.
Yeah, right. It's going to force people to do better. Mm-hmm. I think when you think about AI and email right now, people are probably thinking about how it could help them write or how it could help them scale. Mm-hmm. But they're not thinking about the email service providers and how they're applying email, how they're applying AI to helping us filter the billions of emails that are getting sent. We're relying on the tools to help us manage the email. And if we want our email to cut through that noise, to get past the robot filters, it can't be tricky. It can't be sneaky. We can't be trying to persuade people with intrigue. We just need to be a lot clearer with what it is we're trying to communicate.
Yeah. And you mentioned our custom GPT based on the book. So we also recognize that, yes, people are using AI to write emails, like Ashley said. But what we found is when you just ask a tool without any kind of context, that the emails that those tools were writing actually were not great. They were not great. They don't follow email best practices. Mm-hmm. Actually, some of the things that a lot of those tools do are things we say not to do. So we took a couple of chapters from the book and made our own custom GPT that takes an email, takes a draft, or takes a bunch of bullet points and creates an email the way we know readers will be able to understand and engage with. And then as a little bonus, we added to the end of the output, like, what changes were made and why. Mm-hmm. So folks are learning how to do this on their own, even without the AI tool, to help them the next time they need to write one.
Yep, I'm a frequent user of that personal GPT. So if anybody's getting a Cascade User Conference email from me, it's most likely written by the mailed-in personal GPT. And I love it because it gives you the subject line, it gives you the preview text, it gives you the body, and then, like you said, it gives you the explanation as well, which I'm so busy, I don't read the explanation. I just say, hey.
You just thank you. Thank you, GPT.
I do put a little bit of a personal spin, you know, a little bit of pepper in there to say I made it, but.
I love it.
Well, and hopefully you like talking with it. I think that's some of the fun feedback we've gotten recently is, this, you know, talking with this AI. Sounds like they're talking with us. Best and friend. If you want to try it, we have all of our resources at our book website, which is emailbook.co. And you'll find the link to the GPT in the resources page.
Yeah, I'll tag it in the recap as well. And nice. The other thing I do with this personal GPT, I use old emails that I've sent in marketing, and I throw them into it and I say, hey, can you make this better and use best practices for it? And it does. And it gives me the explanation, hey, this is what I changed here and there. But it's super polite too, you know. It's like, it's kind of like, I haven't talked to Ashley much, but I know Day a little bit better. And it's kind of like, okay, I see them coming out of this thing. Like, it feels like I'm talking to them a little bit. So that's a nice thing about it too. But yeah, so there was one thing you talked about, good email differentiator right there. You know, you want to make sure you connect, build trust with the people that land in your inbox, or you land in their inbox, because we've all get those sales emails, those marketing emails. And I tell you, 9 out of 10, if I don't know the recipient and I can read through the lines that it's a marketing email, I literally don't even read the headline or subject line. Maybe I read the first 5 words, but then I delete it because I'm like, okay, I'm looking, I'm scanning, you know, and I'm like, okay, there's a pitch right there. Boom. I don't need this right now. But if I know you, I trust you. I'll at least give it a look, you know? So give me a little bit about that. How do you become a personal friend, so to speak?
Yeah, trust is so important. This is one of the things I think I talk about the most, because we give you a lot of hacks. We give you a lot of really solid tactics that you can walk away with in the book and in our workshops. But if you can't pass that first test, like you said, Chris, if you can't pass the from name test and you don't have a relationship with your reader, the hacks aren't going to work. You know, the tactics aren't, you can't apply the rest. And so a good email for us is all about the building the relationship with the reader and respecting the reader. And we want, you know, at Cornell, we want every time somebody sees a email from Cornell University for them to even subconsciously think, oh, this, there's something in here for me. This is one that I'm going to pause. I'm going to open. Maybe I'll save it for later because I want time to be able to open and really understand it. And we want to build that habit with our readers that we are serving them what they need. We're there to help. We're there to be part of maybe putting a smile on their face or helping them be successful and delivering that value every time we send, making sure that there's something in there, even if there's other, if we have other priorities, you know, we have to think about their priorities too. And so for me, that really, that's the part of what makes a good email. It's not that you perfectly formatted it. It's not that you put the links and the buttons in the right place. That's going to help you get results. But a good email is one that somebody wants. Somebody wants to receive.
Yeah, I see this as a huge, I would say mistake even in the enrollment space especially, because I have seen, I don't even know, dozens and dozens of comm flows at this point in my career. And I have yet to see one that actually is sending content that is written for the student. It's usually content about us. It's our campus, our food, our programs, our everything. And yes, they want to know those things, right? But there's this whole other part of what's happening in that during that time in a person's life that all of these schools ignore. You know, you're doing finals, you're taking your AP tests, you need to prep for the SAT, you're going to prom, right? You have a part-time job. And what Ashley and I have found is like emails are good when they acknowledge the full person, right? So I'm not just sending you content about me. I'm sending you content about me that might help you in this point in time that you are going through. And that, I think, is the real differentiator for any audience, but especially for prospective students.
Yeah, that reminds me a lot about, I talk a lot to higher ed marketers that do social media, and they're really big on user-generated content on the social platform, right? Where students talk about themselves, they talk about the struggles, they talk about the happenings, like it's exam season right now or something like that. But I feel like it's accepted on social media, but we haven't made the correlation with email yet because we still see it as like this business tool to keep it more professional and uptight. And same with me, every once in a while, I put a GIF in it, but I feel a little icky about it because I like,
Yes, you can. And I'm actually, I just recently wrote a recommendation for one of my clients. It's like, why don't you have current students plan the content for your email flows? And that's right. Like, let's break that barrier because, well, I mean, there are certain things social is great at and there are certain things emails are also great at. But even having a student voice involved in the planning, I think, will change the type of content that is produced and sent via email.
Earlier, you talked about the emails. Sometimes you get the emails. I mean, you have that trust and you can't read it right away. You kind of save it for later. Like, I have a folder in my email that's must reads that I throw in there that are marketing emails. For example, I subscribe to Kyle Campbell's newsletter, but Kyle Campbell's newsletter is so long and so in depth that I'm not reading it when I get it in the morning at work. You know, and so I put it aside because I want to read it when I have time in the evening. But on the flip side, there's Brian Piper's newsletter. It's a bite-sized little newsletter that you get. And it's like, I can read that. It's like 3-minute read for me, and then I'll be on my way, and I read it every time. Same with Jamie Hunt's newsletter. It's a short little newsletter, and I always respond to these people because I know them, right? I feel like, oh, I don't feel awkward responding to somebody, throwing a response in the void, because I always get a response back, you know? And this is kind of like how you built that, what you call the sender reputation, which is also a foundation of a good email strategy, I think. But we talked about the good, and you talked about something else, which is called the spam trap. You know, something we all worry about, and something I don't really, I worry about it, but I'm like, well, the email's out. How do I know I'm in a spam trap? You know, I just keep sending them. What's one thing you wish that every marketer knew about staying out of the dreaded spam trap or folder?
Sender reputation and the spam traps, it's a real problem. Right now, it has been in 2024. If you saw your email marketing results tank, it's because there were massive changes in email service providers, and they're applying these AI tools that we talked about already, and they are using these sender reputation scores which are becoming more sophisticated, to decide whether your email is one that should be delivered to the inbox. Mm-hmm. And if you are tracking your engagement metrics, you can start to see what is human interaction and what is robot interaction. So that's where I would start first. Mm-hmm. I like to send my newsletter at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I do that for a couple of reasons. I know that really busy, successful people wake up early in the morning and check their email. So I want them to be able to see it first thing when they wake up. Mm-hmm. But I also know that most of my readers read closer to 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. And I can see in the hour by hour interaction that it's growing. I would have said early 24, about 17% of my emails were opened by robots, and now it's over 20%. So it's growing. And so the open rate, you can still benchmark against yourself and see an open rate climb, but there is a percentage of your open rate that is not humans opening. There's also a percentage of your click rate that is not humans clicking. And so what is happening is the email service providers are doing a scan of your email. They're trying to understand what it is, and they're making a decision as soon as you send it. And so you can see it right at 5 a.m. I know 300 people were not up reading and clicking on the email. I know. And it'll show me that some of my other email addresses were the ones that were doing this activity. And I know I didn't do it right. I know it's the tool doing it for me. So taking that kind of percentage, and if you are only seeing a 20% open rate, that's your first indicator that the rest is not getting delivered, right? Wow. So if you're getting, you're seeing very low, something in the 20 to 30% open rate, and 20% of those are robots, you are reaching a very small amount of your audience. And the rest is getting put into, I don't fear the promotions tab. People still look at their promotions tab. But it's going in junk, or worst case scenario, it's going into spam, and it's not being, it will show as delivered, but it's really not getting to your recipient. And so there is an email reputation score that you can look at. The tools, each email service provider has a tool. They're typically called the Postmaster tool. And you can go there and see where exactly your email, was it delivered to junk? Was it not delivered to inboxes at all? And then you can start rehabbing your reputation by, oftentimes it's because you're sending a really high volume and you need to go back to a smaller volume of emails and kind of batch send under 5,000 emails at a time and get people reading and opening and clicking and engaging. And that will help your score. It's kind of like a credit score. Like, you have to go back and you have to take the time to do it right and build your reputation again. But I see people fall into a couple of traps, especially in higher education, when something bad goes you know, something bad happens, or like in the pandemic, this happened a lot where we decided not to talk, right? If there's a crisis, we pull back. Or if there's something happening globally, where we have people currently right now in the West Coast, you might say, let's not bother them. And instead, what we need to do is we need to find a way to stay engaged. Maybe pivot what you were going to send and send something that is helpful. But keeping the keeping the conversation up is going to be part of maintaining your reputation. If you go quiet for even 30 days, that can hurt your sender reputation. And so if you're an organization that's only sending one, you know, one monthly newsletter, it's going to be a long time for you to be able to build that.
I went through your workshop and you mentioned that you know, the sending it more frequently than newsletter, because we had a monthly newsletter, monthly roundup, but then I switched it to bi-weekly. So every other week I send it now, just to up that, you know, that repetition, and the uptick's been there, the readership's been up slowly, but now I'm concerned that my number is caused by bots. Like, I can't feel too proud of it anymore now, you know. Now I actually want to go into the Postmaster view in MailChimp, or at least try to find that out, because honestly I haven't looked at that. I just look at the
I would say for most organizations, the largest email service provider on the reader side is going to be Gmail. So starting with Gmail's Postmaster tool, you can go to Microsoft for theirs next for Outlook.
Okay.
Cool. But start with Google's, and they'll tell you where it's going. They'll give you your score.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Day, any thoughts about this?
Yeah, there's something that we hear a lot about too. This is something we put in the book. Clean up your lists, right? So there's also, like, spam traps are fake email addresses that get themselves added to your list. They look like real people, but they never engage with your stuff, right? So if you're sending emails over and over and over, and there's a group of people who never open it, never engage, send them a breakup email and let them go. And that's really hard to do because we take pride in the number of people on our list. But that could also be hurting you, because that's one of the ways that these email tools measure whether you are paying attention and sending relevant content to people who want it. So that's another thing I would add. Clean up your lists. And, you know, I know we're going to get into some of the more tactical stuff, but also pay attention to your subject lines. We talked about these AI tools opening up the emails and scanning and deciding whether it's going to be spam or not. One of the ways that they do that is they compare the content in your email to your subject line. And if it doesn't match, you're not in a good spot. So Ashley and I, even before all this happened, have always advocated using the subject line as a summary of the email. Tell them what's in the email. And now it's even more important, because that's one of the things that the robots are looking at to decide whether you're worth the reader's time or not.
That makes a lot of sense. I like that. Send that breakup email. It actually happened to me recently from a hired marketer who sends out a newsletter. I love the newsletter, but I did an audit of my email inbox, and I was like, I'm getting too many newsletters. So I decided to unsubscribe from that newsletter, right? A couple of weeks later, this marketer reached out to me and said, hey, I'm doing some end of the year cleaning, looking through my unsubscribes. Just want to make sure I saw you unsubscribed. You used to be really engaged with my newsletter. Just want to make sure that's,
that's,
I was like, holy cow, this person actually noticed. So I actually felt I felt like I was a valued reader. So I was like, oh, sorry. Yeah.
So now you're back.
Yeah, I did. I am back, actually. More engaged than ever, actually, because this person took the time to reach out to me. I don't know if it was an automated email to everybody, but I did feel valued. And, you know, I said, I gave the explanation. I said, hey, you know, I had too many newsletters. Not that your newsletter is not relevant, but I just had to cut a couple of them. So I put that one back on, and I'm reading it ever since. I've been reading it ever since and engaging. So this is how you get some people back on the track, I guess. But yeah, Segmentation. How do you recommend balancing the efficiency with personalization when segmenting lists? You know, sometimes we have too many lists, and like you said, Ashley, if you send too many at once, there may be some bots involved.
I love the example you just shared, because that is a perfect example of something personalized that maybe wasn't individual to you, right? You just said, I don't know if that email went to everyone. Exactly. It didn't matter if it maybe went to all 100 people who unsubscribed. You felt it was personal to you. So I used to be super intimidated by personalization, thinking it had to be individualization, right? But it doesn't have to be. There are ways to make your emails feel personal that don't mean that you're sending 10, 12, 15 different segmented emails. So there's a couple tips. One is tone. Ash is really good at this with her newsletter. Like, it feels like she is talking to you, even though there's 3,000 people on that list, right? Something like that. I don't know, Ashley. So write as if you were writing to one single person that you are looking at in person across a table from you at a coffee shop, and that will already make it feel personal. That's one tip. Another tip is kind of like personas, like motivation-based personas, or like shared human experience moments. When you can think about a group of people going through the same thing, right? You unsubscribing, a prospective student having to choose a university, all of us going through the first time it's warm enough to sit outside, right? Now that we're in this deep winter here. When you can think about these moments that people are going through that are happening to more than one person, if you write to that moment, if you write to the needs of that moment, it's going to feel personal, even if it is an individual to them, right? So we see it with retail all the time, right? Like when it's the new year, like we're all getting new year related stuff, right? Because we're all going through that moment at the same time. And then the last thing is, of course, if you have tech, if you are able to add dynamic content to your emails, that helps you a ton, because you can just kind of program that. So in enrollment, right, like if a student is interested in a certain program, you can just drop that in based on a conditional field, something that's in the record of the student. Calls to action can be changed, start an application versus finish an application. So I think that helps, but it's not necessary for things to be personal. My rule of thumb always is, like, if you find yourself writing, if this applies to you in your email, that's your biggest flag. Like, you got to go and segment. You should never be writing if this applies to you. That's it. And like, that's how I measure when I need to personalize and segment.
You mentioned the F pattern concept as well. I mean, I've heard it before, but you showed a good heat map during the workshop where you can see actually where people look at where they're looking, right? Tell us a little bit about the F pattern concept for people that don't know what it is.
Yeah, so this is something that comes from actually from web, it isn't specific to email. So one of the things Ashley and I are really good at is taking research from other fields and wondering, how do we apply this to what we do? And so this is one of those situations. I was in a job at Penn State in charge of a lot of emails, and I was just trying to learn about how people read stuff on the web. And I found this idea of an F pattern. So the Nielsen-Norman group put out a study like 20 years ago, and they found that when folks are presented with content on a simple background, what their eyes do is they follow what they coined the F pattern. So they read a horizontal line at the top, they kind of drop a little bit and like read another beginning horizontal line, and then they just do a left-hand vertical scan all the way to the bottom to see if anything else interesting is there for them. So that's when I asked myself, I wonder if this works for email. And we started trying it, and it does. It does work. So what we have then kind of almost used as the law for email writing for ourselves is those are the most important spots in an email. The first line, that middle horizontal line, so the beginning of your second paragraph or that button placement, and then a left-hand scan down to the bottom. So what does this mean? It means that we can't waste that first line, and a lot of us do. A lot of us start emails with something very nice. Like,
I
Ashley,
hope this finds you well.
Yeah, I hope this finds you well. Or it was so lovely to see you. We can't do that because in that scan, mm-hmm. like the brain is going to do the F pattern, and one of your three spots where people are looking, you just threw it away. You threw it away.
Yeah.
The other thing that we realized with this F pattern is that the button placement is really effective right there mm-hmm. where that second horizontal line would be, because again, that's where the eyes are going to go. It doesn't have to be a button. It could be the next most important thing you want to say, or yeah. your call to action in a link, or anything like what you put in the beginning of that second position is important. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that it kind of changed for us is if people are doing a scan of just the beginning of sentences mm-hmm. along the left-hand side, most of us don't write that way. Most of us, when we write a sentence, we do all of the like the caveats and the niceties at the beginning of a sentence, and then we say the thing. Like, when you have a chance, could you fill out this doodle poll? Or if it's not too much trouble, can you send me this? Or so we all start sentences like that. And what we realize is if we want to take advantage of the F pattern, we need to flip that. We need to start with the action, right? Mm-hmm. Fill this out when you have a minute.
Yeah.
Send me the document if you have it, right? Like, so we need to flip the order of things, understanding that the eyes are only going to look at the left-hand side. So that's what the F pattern is. That's how we applied to email. And we have found it to be such an effective hack that it almost blows our minds still when we see the results. Yeah.
That is amazing. I love when you presented on that. And then there's another important thing that you mentioned, that people are looking at the PS at the bottom of the email as well.
Yes.
Quite a bit. But Ashley, I know you have a very successful newsletter at Cornell. And as we land the plane of this podcast episode, I want to talk about one more very important subject, which is the subject line. And they're so critical for people to go ahead and open that. So what's the process of crafting an effective subject line? How long should it be? And I know you mentioned that it should summarize the email at large.
Yeah, this is so hard. I think Day and I have been breaking hearts of email marketers all over the world when we tell them that they can't do cute subject lines anymore. That was probably the most fun thing about writing an email, was having a subject line, like pushing all of your creativity into this subject line that was going to grab people's attention and get them excited about your email. And we just burned that. Like we did all of the things, we tried all of the creativity, and it now people are over it. So what we need people to do is just tell people what's in the email and be very clear. And I have found in training people how to do this that people who have been writing emails for a long time, they actually have been writing really great subject lines as pre-header text instead. And so they'll write something really fun and creative as a subject line, and then they'll say exactly what's in the email. They'll give, like, they'll bring clarity to that fun right in their pre-header text. And so it's really simple just to flip those, provide the clarity, say what's in the email, 6 to 9 words. And then continue. And if you want to have a little fun, if you want to show your voice and tone, you can do that in that pre-header text, or you can continue to provide clarity in that pre-header text. But it makes such a big difference for the reader when they're trying to decide in 2 seconds whether they want to engage in your email or not. If you are setting them up with a question, which was advice, like that was best practice, make it a question, make it enticing. Mm-hmm. You're setting them up with a question in their inbox. They're like, I don't have time for this.
Yeah.
I want to try to guess what you want me to do. Mm. And then they're moving on. But if you just tell them, here's what's inside, then they can make an informed decision, and they will not rage unsubscribe because you're trying to trick them. They will be more likely, you know, maybe it's not something that they want and they're going to delete it, but they're not going to be upset with you sending them an email and being really clear about what you were sending. They're going to say, no, thank you, delete. And they're going to see stick around to see what's next. And hopefully the next thing that we send is more on point for them. But our job, Day and I say this all the time, our job as communicators is not to send email. Our job as communicators is to make sure the messages that we're sending are in fact received on the other end. And if we can deliver that message just in the subject line, the deadline is this. That's the message we need to send. There's no need to hide it. We've done our job. We've given people the information that they need to take their next step.
One thing I read in the book as well is that not to be afraid to use emojis if appropriate.
Yes.
Which something I thought would be a big no-no as well, but apparently not. So we'll go ahead and try that as well. But Day and Ashley, thank you so much for being part of the Education Marketing Leader podcast. How can people get in touch with you? Most importantly, how can they get a hold of the book?
Yes. So everybody should go to emailbook.co. All of the retailer links are available there. And there's more for you there. We have the templates we were talking about based on the F pattern. We have other resources that we use a ton. And, of course, a link to that GPT we were talking about. But other than that, folks can reach me at LinkedIn.
Yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn, too. Or my website if you want to sign up for my emails at ashleybud.com.
Perfect. I'll be sure to tag you both in the recap. And if anybody wants a more in-depth personalized experience, Ashley and Day also hold email workshops. So everybody, that was today's episode of the Education Marketing Leader. Thank you everybody for listening. Day and Ashley, thank you for being a part of it. You have a good one, friends.
Thank you.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for tuning into the show and sticking with me to the end. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe to the Education Marketing Leader and share it with your friends and your network. This episode was brought to you by Scribasound Podcast Production. It's one of my ventures. If you ever thought about starting your own podcast, be sure to reach out to me. I would love to help. You follow the show and tune in every other Thursday as I interview higher ed marketing leaders for your benefit. I see you next time. Have a good day, friends. Take care.